Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Paranexus Universe. Today is Thursday, January 15th, 2009. My name is Doug Kelly. Good to have everybody here. Here with Grant Rubin Dunst, my good friend. Hey, Grant.
Hey, Doug. Happy Thursday night, everybody. Probably one of the chilliest nights in Florida in a long time, eh, Doug?
Yeah, and it's going to be they're staying chilly, I guess, for a few days.
It might even have a frost. That's just like, wow.
I know. I mean, it gets down to 60, and we're all freezing our butts off here.
Yeah, so in a parka today, you know.
Yeah, I know. We're proud of it. We're proud of it. Yeah. What was that funny white stuff they have up north? I can't remember.
I don't miss it at all. Can't say that I do.
Really slipping. Well, tonight we are going to have our very own Mike Jones with us, and we're going to be talking about alien abductions, and even really focusing on a hypnotic regression that Mike and I did here a few months ago. We've done several, and this is the first one, and let's just bring Mike on. Mike, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Good. It's always good to have you on the show, Mike.
Yeah. You're an old pro or a young pro now, right?
Yeah, young pro, probably.
Yeah, undoubtedly. And as always, if you've got questions, please post them in the chat room. If you'd like to call in and ask a question, the number's there on your screen. I've also posted it in the chat room. And you can call in on the click-to-talk button there, too, if you have a headset on your computer. So it should be an interesting show tonight, because this is the first time we've really ever talked about regressions per se. We've never really played a regression on the air before, so we're going to do that tonight. But this regression that we're going to do, we did last July. This was Mike's first regression. Mike, you want to just kind of bring the audience up to date on your situation briefly?
Oh, as far as right now or as far as going into the regression, what started that process?
Just a little on your background, why we even did the regressions.
Oh, okay. Well, for me personally, I've been haunted all my life with, just memories of a praying mantis chasing me. I had been having flashbacks of it, you know. I've been seeing things that, you know, Whitley Strieber came out in the late 80s, early 90s talking about grays. Well, I'd already known about them since the 70s, you know, since childhood. But I didn't know what they're actually call them. And they've been haunting me all my life. I had different experiences, but I never really had a full memory of the entire experience. I was only getting bits and pieces of it, and I'd actually discussed with you on several occasions about doing regressions, and we decided to go that route to go ahead and see how much I could actually dig out of the first moments of when it started.
Yeah, that was an interesting. It was an interesting time, and it still is, and we're continuing to do regressions. But let's talk about hypnotic regressions for a moment. And, you know, Grant, I don't know if you were aware of this. This is something I wasn't aware of, but I'm reading this book by Jenny Randles on abductions and UFOs and so on and so forth. Now, this book came out in the early 90s, and I'd read it once before, but I really didn't remember reading this part. But apparently hypnosis at least at the time in the early 90s, was not something that was used in Britain or in Europe very much. In fact, they almost frowned on it, the ufologists there. It was used a lot, of course, in the United States and still is with this. Are you aware of any of that, Grant? Anything?
No, that's news to me, Doug. I have to admit, that's news. I didn't know that that was the European, you know, mindset.
And I don't know if it still is. I'd like to find out, and I plan to find out. But I just read that, I think, last night or the night before, and really hadn't had a chance to look into it. But let's talk about hypnosis, how reliable it is, what it's about, and so on and so forth. Hypnosis is obviously used for a lot of purposes. It's really akin to controlled daydreaming. Hypnosis is not about the hypnotist's control over a person. It's about the person's control over a person. So people will use hypnosis for numerous, numerous things, to personal growth. It goes from everything from stopping smoking to weight loss to personal empowerment to confidence. You name it, you can help it and enhance it with hypnosis. Well, hypnosis is also used for regressions, and we've done a number of regressions on different folks who thought that they may have been abductees. And at this point, Mike is pretty much not the only one that I'm aware of right now that we've dealt with directly, that we're pretty confident in what's going on. Something's going on, obviously. And so, hypnosis, is it reliable? Well, the answer is yes and no. Can you trust something that's recalled during hypnosis? Is it 100% accurate? No, not necessarily. Hypnosis enhances a person's ability to recall, but that doesn't necessarily mean with every person that what they recall is the absolute truth. Hypnosis uses a lot of visualization. It's guided imagery, which is pretty much the way the mind works. So, you know, we're not saying that just because we recovered a memory in hypnosis that it's absolutely true and it happened. You really have to take a lot of things into context. You have to look at the big picture when you're doing regressions. You have to see if it rings true. Now, we've had David Jacobs on the program before, here a few months ago. We even had Daryl Sims on here a couple of months ago, or last month. And he, of course, is a hypnotist as well. And everybody understands this. And so what you do is you try to get corroborating stories, shall we say. You conduct hypnosis on a number of abductees, see what the stories tell you, see if there's any congruency, if there's any corroborating aspects to it. And, of course, that's what Bud Hopkins has done, David Jacobs has done, Daryl Sims has done, and that's what we endeavor to do as well. Now, as we get into this, what we're going to do is we're going to start playing this regression. The entire regression episode that I have for you here is 47 minutes. We're not going to play it all in one big lump sum here. We're going to play parts of it and then comment on those. What I've done to this audio is I've left out the induction. That's the process where you actually put the person into hypnosis. It's not necessary for our discussion tonight. So we pick up just before I start regressing Mike back to the incident, which was, well, so far as we know now, Mike, this was probably your first experience as far as...
Yeah, at the age of four. You know, after we went back and reviewed it, we actually pretty much figured it was age of four. So.
Right, I think the audio says six. So, you know, there is an instance there where, you know, it's close. And that's what you got to look at this. You can't look at this. You have to look at this with an open mind, and you have to look at it and say, okay, does it jibe with other things we know? So that's kind of the way we're taking it. So anything you'd like to comment on, either Grant or Mike, before I begin the first?
Yeah, I'd just like to make a comment. First of all, hypnosis has its place in the medical community. It's still used, and it's been very effective. But, you know, I think most importantly, hats off to Mike, because he's willing to share something that a lot of times, you know, folks in the audience should be aware of the fact that this is an actual regression, you know, Mike has been kind enough to share that with us, and these can be very personal experiences. So, you know, thank you very much, Mike, for doing it. And, you know, and realize this is a real regression. This is not, you know, Hollywood or, you know, one that's been staged. This is something that actually occurred.
Good. Anything, Mike, you want to comment on before we get started?
Yeah, just for the audience out there, you know, even though I've already reviewed this several times over, it's still going to have emotional content for me. So if you hear me stutter or something, it's because I'm actually still reliving some of it. It's hard to ingest. You know, you have solid memory that you carry with you from, you know, memories you already had. And then when you start filling in the gaps and start tying things back together, that's when the actual shock of what's happened, you know, hits home. So it does take, quite a while to get over. But like I said, you know, with the listening to the audio and all, I'll make comments and ask, you know, answer questions as the audience, you know, would like to ask. So I guess we can just go ahead with audio.
Okay, good. Just a couple of other – I can't even talk tonight.
Oh, you're fine. It's just the cold. We're not used to this cold.
It's the cold. That's what it is. Thanks, Grant. You're so
good. 50 degrees outside. Come on, Doug. We're not used to this.
And I'm proud of that fact, too. Anyway, here's how we conducted this session. Since Mike lives in Arkansas and I'm, of course, in Chile, Florida, we used – what did we use the first time? I think we used Skype the first time, didn't we?
Yes.
And so – and I just want to make a comment on that. I don't typically conduct hypnosis sessions using Skype. And the only reason I did it in this case, well, obviously we're spread apart here by, 1,500,000 miles, something like that. What is it, 1,000? I think it's about 1,000.
Yeah, that's right at that.
And I had a lot of confidence in Mike's stability and his groundedness, and therefore the possibility of an ab reaction was very, very, very slim. And that's the only reason I did it over Skype. But it made it possible. So what I'm going to do is start the audio. If anybody has a question on any part of it, type it in the chat room. If you want to call in, you can. We'll take some brief calls if you want to call. Otherwise, let's get started. Here we go. Now, in a moment, we're going to visit some different times in your life. And it's going to be completely safe. Through this entire sequence, you will be an observer. And only an observer, you may see yourself in the third person. And that's just fine. You will never become emotionally invested in anything you see. Once you understand this, I want you to say yes.
Yes.
Very good. Now, I'm going to take you down a beautiful staircase. I want the staircase in your mind to have 10 steps, and it can be any kind of a beautiful staircase you choose. I want it fixed set in your mind, and at the bottom of the staircase are two big, beautiful doors. They are the entrance to the archives of your mind. I want you to see yourself at the top of this beautiful staircase, and we're going to take one step at a time all the way down to the archives of your mind. Behind those two beautiful doors is every experience you've ever had, every thought, every feeling, everything about your existence. We're at the top of the stairs now, 10, stepping down, 9. I want you to go 10 times as more deeply relaxed. 8, gently deeper. 7, one step at a time takes you 10 times more deeply relaxed. 6, going easily. 5, looking so forward to what's behind those doors. 4, 10 times more deeply relaxed now. 3, even deeper. 2, more deeply relaxed. 1, you're there. I want you to see yourself standing in front of these two big, beautiful doors, feeling excitement for what you're about to see. Because behind these doors is every thought, every feeling, every experience you've ever had in your entire existence. I want you to now open those two doors with your mind, because they are yours. And I want you to step through. And I want you to look around You'll see all kinds of bookcases, hundreds, thousands of books recording every moment of your existence. This is a magical place for you because it is really your soul, your existence. As you begin to walk into this archives of your mind, seeing all these books on all these shelves, you are automatically drawn toward a bookshelf. I want you to step up to it. And when you're in front of it, I want you to say yes.
Yes.
Now, as you look at the books on this bookshelf, you're going to be automatically drawn to one of the books. It can be any one, whichever one you're drawn to. I want you to reach up, and I want you to take it off the shelf, and I want you to place it on the table in front of you. Now, before you do, this book has significant meaning for your life today, in present time. I want you to find the book you're drawn to. I want you to take it off the shelf and place it on the table in front of you. When you have, say yes.
Yes.
I want you to look at the cover. On the cover is a year. When you can clearly see that year, I want you to tell me what year it is.
1972.
Very good. Now, in a moment, you're going to open this book, and inside this book are all the experiences, all the memories, all the thoughts you had in 1972. And when you open it, you'll find words, you'll find pictures, you'll find anything there that describes everything about your life in 1972. Furthermore, when you open it, you're going to automatically open it to a specific event in 1972 that has meaning for your life today. When you're ready, I want you to open the book, and I want you to describe what you see.
See pages.
On those pages, what do you see?
Pictures.
What are the pictures of?
House in Athens, Arkansas.
Keep going. What's significant about this house in Athens, Arkansas?
I think it was the first house my parents had.
How old are you here?
6.
Did you like this house?
Yeah.
Look at the pictures in the book. What's significant, what's meaningful about this house for you at this age?
I got my first bedroom.
Good. Is there anything further or meaningful about this bedroom as pertains to your life in the present day? Take a deep breath in through your nose, out through your mouth, and become even more deeply relaxed. Look at the book, the pages. Is there anything in this book that has meaning for your life today?
Yeah.
Very good. Look at the book, look at the pages. I'm going to count from 3 to 1. As I do, you become even more deeply relaxed, and you'll instantly know what that meaning is. 3, 2, 1. you see anything.
Yeah.
Remember, you are a third-party observer here. You are not emotionally invested. Take a deep breath. I'm going to say 3, 2, 1, and when I do, you will remove yourself to a third-party position. When you understand that, say yes.
Yes.
3, 2, 1. Where are you at now?
Standing in my bedroom.
What time of the day is it? Day or night?
It's night.
Are you alone or with someone?
Somebody's in the room.
I want you to take a look as the third person and see who is it. Can you see anybody?
Yeah, kind of.
Male or female?
I can't tell.
How tall is this person?
4.5.
How many people are there in this room besides you?
One.
Okay. What's this person doing?
He's leaning over the bed.
Can you describe this person?
Got a big head.
Do you see yourself lying in the bed asleep or awake?
I'm lying there asleep.
And remember, you are a third-party observer without any emotional investment. How long does this person lean over the bed?
Not very.
Okay. I want you to forward fast until the next meaningful thing happens. What does he do next? What happens next?
He takes my hand.
And then what?
Walk out of the room.
Are you asleep or awake when this happens? Your 6-year-old self.
I'm asleep.
He takes your hand and walks you out of the room. Through the door? How does he walk you out of the room?
That's a wall.
Okay, we're back live for a moment. We wanted to pause just for a second to talk briefly about what's happened up to this point. Now, Mike, you and I discussed this a little bit earlier today. At this point, when we did this hypnosis regression session, it was really, I mean, we had thought that there might be some abduction activity going on, but as you can see, I did not slant Mike in that direction. Any comments, Mike?
Yeah, that's another thing we had discussed, that I wanted to make sure that it had nothing to do with any psychological problems I had. You know, that's the thing here, when we were doing the regression, I wanted to leave it in a sense of a blind study enough to where I could find out whether it was me or was it an actual occurrence. So, you know, the fact that I wasn't led at any point to discussing, you know, 4.5-foot grays in my room really meant a lot. I mean, you know, for me, I'd like I said, I'd seen them, you know, I get, you know, flashbacks, I guess, from the trauma, you know, for most of my life. And of course, the other that you'll hear about here in a little bit. But, you know, it's really important for somebody that's been abducted, I think, to have some form of validation. And when you go to a hypnotherapist, I think the biggest thing you have to really watch for is having somebody lead you. It's one thing to, you know, have a reputable hypnotherapist that's really good at what they do, but it's a whole nother to have somebody that's mindful enough to allow you to remember what's actually going on without, you know, leading you down whatever storyline they want. And that really meant a lot to me.
And that's important when you're doing regressions such as this. You never volunteer information that the client has not already stated earlier. And so I really strive to not do that, to not introduce any new information. Now, one other point that I want to make is that there will be some moments during this recording where there's pauses. And I can tell you from experience, and in fact I was there, that there were parts of it that was difficult for Mike, and so there were some pauses there, so don't let those throw you. Another thing that you'll notice is there's a little variation in the volume, and the reason for this is that when we recorded this, our volumes were quite offset. Mike was much louder than I was, so I went through and edited the audio simply to bring my level up so we could replay it tonight. Now, before we get back into the recording, Sharon has a question. He saw himself as being asleep. Does that mean he really wasn't asleep, or his subconscious was recording this? Well, go ahead, Mike, if you want to comment on it.
No. For me personally, you know, as I look back on it, as much as I've discovered about my experiences with the Grays, they seem to come in and turn your body off. You know, you got to remember, during this regression, I'm at that age, so I'm expressing stuff from that viewpoint of that age. And, you know, for somebody that age, you look like you're asleep. You're asleep. You don't look, you know, they don't understand, you know, playing possum, I guess would be a better word for it. Yeah. But, you know, that's what they view, you know, so that's what I would express. I don't know, you know, personally, that's something I need to explore, I think. But I actually think what was going on is they had me pretty much my body turned off, and I was awake, and that's the reason I actually realized the situation of what was going on, or I couldn't have expressed what I was viewing.
Exactly, and that's the point. He wasn't asleep, but he appeared to be, at least in this this revision or this version here. Another question is, how old were you when this happened? And even though in the regression audio we say six, we've determined that you were four in 1960.
I was four, right. And if you will actually look at child psychology, a lot of kids at the age of 4 and 5 always express that they're a year or two older than they are because they want to be. And that's the only thing I can figure out why I would even say that I was 6 years old.
Well, but, and even at 4 years old, I mean, come on.
How good are you at numbers?
Yeah, sometimes you can mess up. All right, so, Grant, any comments before we...
None that come to mind right off the bat. You know, I would just encourage folks to remember the fact that, you know, hypnosis has been very effective with people who have had traumatic incidents in their lives. Particularly, it's been used with veterans from the First World War, Second World War. I don't know how much it's used in the VA hospitals now, but it has been used as a very effective tool in helping folks that have had traumatic and stressful exposure to those. So, yeah, post-traumatic stress syndrome. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Let's pick up the recording now. If you recall, and Mike, I'm not sure I'm understanding what you're telling me in chat, if you just want to tell me.
The advertisement that keeps popping up on your Explorer should stop if you use the stop button at the top of your page.
I didn't even hear it. Did it come through?
Yeah.
Apparently. Okay, sorry, folks. I'm going to have to shoot Blog Talk Radio a note. They've got these audio advertisements on their page, and you can't access your account without getting on the page, and that's just not a good place. So if you hear it again, let me know, and I've done that, and I'll get out of that. Thanks for that heads up. Again, going back to the recording now, Mike has stated that – I'm going to have to find it again, hit the wrong button. Give me 1 second. Let me try to pick up where we left off here. But the last thing he stated was they were carrying him through the wall. Let me – give me 1 second here, and I'll try to find the place where we left off.
Pictures.
What are the pictures of?
Anything there that describes everything about your life in 1972. Furthermore, when you open it, you're going to automatically open it to a...
That's probably about 5 minutes more into it, Doug.
out through your mouth and become even more deeply relaxed.
Yeah. I didn't notice where we were at because I was watching too many other screens.
Look the pages.
Yeah.
Now, you're a third-party observer here without any emotional investment. Say yes if you understand that.
I'm going to let it go here, folks.
Yes.
Very good. You're able in your mind to follow them where they go. Your six-year-old self and this person. I want you to follow them and tell me what happens next.
We're outside.
Outside the house, front or backyard, side of the house, where are you at?
Front yard.
What happens next?
They vanish.
Okay. Because of this special place you're in, you are a third-party observer, and you have complete control to go wherever they go. I want you to follow them and tell me where you find yourself.
I'm in a bright lit room.
Do you know where you are? Describe the room.
It's round. I see like two doors.
Everything is so easy for you to observe as a third party, non-emotionally invested person. You're an observer. As you look around this room as an observer, what color are the walls?
They look metallic. They're kind of glowing.
Who is in this room?
The person with me.
So you see one person plus your six-year-old self?
Yeah.
Anyone else in the room?
No.
Where is your six-year-old self at?
He's still got my hand.
Okay, what happens next?
He leads me through one of the doorways.
Into another room?
Yes.
Describe the room.
Kind of dark. It's just like a table.
Can you tell how big the room is in feet?
About 10 feet.
Is it square or round?
Looks kind of square. One of the walls is rounded.
Now, in addition to you, this person, and your six-year-old self, who else is in the room?
Can't tell how many.
Are there others in the room?
Yes.
Now, in this special state that you're in, this third-party observer, you have an ability to move around the room at will, even into the dark places, and tell everything you want to say about that room. So they're unaware you're there. I want you to move around and see if you can see anything else identifying these others that are in there. Any other qualities or attributes?
There are others that look like the guy that's holding my hand.
I want you to go and count each one. How many others are there?
Seven.
Plus your six-year-old self.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you see the being that's holding your six-year-old self's hand. What happens next?
He's leading me to the table.
Continue. What happens next?
He gets me to lay on the table.
Are you awake or asleep, your six-year-old self?
Looks like I'm awake.
Is your six-year-old self, is there any kind of visible emotions, or is he saying anything?
Look, it looks like I'm in shock.
Okay.
Not saying anything.
He's on the table now, right?
Yeah, he's sitting on the table.
What's he wearing?
His pajamas.
Now, what happens next?
They want him to lay down.
Does he?
I don't want to lay down.
Is he saying anything?
Yeah. He wants to go home.
Describe his reaction to this.
He's getting upset.
He's crying?
Yes.
Remember, you in this position are a third party, unemotionally invested in a person, observer, correct?
Yes.
Any emotions that the little boy feels, you do not feel here and now. Understand?
Yes.
Good. You're an objective observer. The little boy is now crying. What happens next?
Somebody else comes in the room.
Describe this person.
It's not like the others. He's taller.
How tall?
5'6". He's taller.
What does he do? Is it male or female? Well, describe this individual. What does it look like?
Doesn't look like the others. It's kind of scary looking.
I'm going to count from 3 to 1. I want you to take a deep breath. And when I count from 3 to 1, you're restored back to a state of an objective observer, third party. 3, 2, 1. Now I want you to look at this individual. Describe him as best you can.
Looks like a praying mantis.
Okay, folks, we're back live. I just paused the recording. And a couple of comments that we want to make. Number one, you'll hear me throughout this recording reminding Mike that he's a third-party observer. He was buying into this big time during the hypnosis. It's such a profound experience, obviously. I was constantly reminding him he was third-party observer. And another thing I want to point out, too, is prior to what you heard on this recording, part of the induction is the suggestion of a peaceful place, which I had him go to and create in his mind, and that was a safe place. That was a place where if at any point I said peaceful place, he was instantly there and away from the situation. So that was all in place. I didn't have to invoke that through this particular recording, though. Now, Mike, before we take some of the questions in the chat room, you talked about a praying mantis type of a being, and that has held some significance for you throughout your life, hasn't it?
I had lots of nightmares and flashbacks all my entire life of being chased by a human-sized praying mantis. I was having nightmares of being in a this is the weird part. I was having nightmares of being in a state fair. You know how you have all the lights and everything around you, and being chased by a praying mantis. And I kept having the same nightmare over and over and over. And then I would get I'd just be out in public, and I would literally get a flash of its face. You know, and I'll give you a good for instance. Even after this regression, you know, I'm on the back deck talking to my father, and there's just, you know, a little insect praying mantis pops
now,
out.
This recently, right?
Yeah, this is how much it's affected me. There's this, just a little insect praying mantis, you know, probably trying to find a place to create a nest or whatever, pops out and stares at me. The first thing I do is I jump back about 2 feet and shudder, and my dad sees me doing this, you know, and it's like my dad's asking me what's wrong, and I was like, I hate the SOB, you know, I hate the SOBs, you know, it's the only thing I could tell him. And, you know, it affected me on a very deep level. It's a hard thing to carry with you, you know. And you'll hear a little bit later what's going on with that, but it's something that I still have problems, you know, dealing with and remembering. And it's pretty damn profound for me, you know.
And, you know, for our audience out there, you know, if you've listened to any of our previous shows with Dr. David Jacobs or, you know, Daryl Sims, or in our previous conversations, you know that what Mike has just kind of talked about and what he's experienced in the tape under regression is consistent with the abduction experience. And, you know, I think one thing that's really interesting, and if folks aren't aware of it, they really ought to, if they find this whole sort of thing fascinating, is they ought to actually read up on the behavior of praying mantises out in nature. And one of the things that I find fascinating is that, you know, by their very nature, they are very deceptive, and they are very cautious in the way that they hunt their prey. So I don't know if there's any correlation there, but other than the fact that what Mike has said certainly is within the content of what other people have experienced, especially with the praying mantis.
Yeah. Another thing I would like to, you know, Doug made mention of, all through this regression, he's constantly having to tell me to go back to third person. And even now, while we're talking, I'm actually kind of shuddering right now. It's an emotional thing. You know, I felt like I was going to explode during the regression, and I know Doug could tell. That's the reason he kept reminding me I need to stay in third person. It's pretty damn emotional situation.
Now,
so,
let's take a couple of these questions in the chat room just so we have them on the audio. When you were walking out, just to recap, you were in your room, you're 4 years old, it's 1972, an entity comes in, takes your hand, and floats you through the wall, correct?
Yes.
And at any point, the question is, when you were walking, were you aware that your feet were touching the floor, or did you float along?
Well, as I was leaving the house, I don't remember ever walking per se. It's like we floated out of the room and out into the front yard. And we went literally from the front yard to inside the ship, or what I think was a ship. You know, there's no telling. Maybe a dimensional thing. I'm not too sure of that. But it wasn't until I was on the ship that I actually remember walking. While I was, you know, on the ground per se, you know, coming out of bed, I was floated out. And that was just really, it was an interesting experience. I don't know if you listened, if you heard in the regression, I was kind of shocked that we were going through the wall. We actually floated through the wall. And I still have a hard time dealing with, you know, just thinking about that alone, you know, outside of the other aspects of it.
Well, another question, did you know any of this so far before the regression?
Actually, I did. I had memories. Like I said, I've had memories of the Greys. I had memories of the praying mantis. And then, of course, I had the nightmares. When I turned teenager age, in that time span, you know, I would go out back, smoke a cigarette, relax. And the moment I would relax my mind, I would get short little pieces of this information, you know, whereas, you know, like, for instance, I'm sitting on the table crying, and I would sit there and be experiencing the emotion while I was a teenager, you know, for no obvious reason. I'm saying, where the hell did that memory come from, you know? And it just little tidbits of this stuff would just bleed through during different parts of my life, but I never had a complete, you know, what happened. And that's the reason we did this regression, you know.
Well, and speaking of floating through the wall thing, you know, that's pretty common, as reported among abductees. And there's also another aspect of this whole abduction thing, because some of these abductions imply that they are a psychic abduction of sorts or a visual type of abduction versus a physical abduction. They're both. And that's one of the aspects we're trying to research. You know, are these, you know, a psychic type of abduction? Are they physical? You know, there are stories that suggest that both may be true at different times for different people. And then one of the things I think is worthy of recapping or reiterating from previous shows is that not everybody who claims to be abducted is, of course, abducted. There are other natural phenomena that can really cause a similar type of experience. And, of course, that's one of them, sleep paralysis, when you get in that hot hypnagogic state just before or between sleep and awake. That is a prime time that people can hallucinate. They can dream vividly. Those are all possible. It's, again, looking at the big picture of everything and trying to fit in everything that you have to try to get a path. I guess the best way to say it is that sleep paralysis and vivid dreaming don't seem to explain all of the different things that are going on with some people.
Well, I would like to put in a comment on the side of that. David Jacobs and the others have even mentioned this, and I can attest to this. I've actually been with friends and been abducted with my friends. I've had a majority of it be daytime. It's not always nighttime. It's not always when you're in bed. You know, it can happen in any moment, anywhere, anytime. There's not a rhyme or reason to it. You know, that's the thing. These researchers out there that are talking about hypnagogic states or, you know, magnetic fields and all these other theories, well, that does apply to a certain percentage of the population. But there are those of us out here who are experiencing this, you know, in awakened states. We're not asleep. It happens, you know. And there's, you know, how do you explain that? How do you explain, you know, the body wounds? How do you explain the bruising? I mean, you know, there's all kinds of different telltale signs that you can't explain away from having a wild dream, you know.
Tricks evidence.
Tricks evidence. I think you also have to point out the fact that hypnagogic states are not something that lasts for, you know, extended periods of time. They're usually brief in duration.
Mm-hmm.
And even states where people are in, like, sleepwalking, you know, the norm would be, you know, not to exceed a certain amount of time. And once again, we're talking about short duration. I think it's also important to really point out, too, that, you know, if you follow any of our shows, we do like to speculate, and, you know, there's some chat in the room in regards to, you know, the configuration or how, you know, what the aliens may look like. And, you know, we don't know. We're not sure, but, you know, we don't rule out anything, and so we don't say that they're like any particular type of science fiction. It's just that one of the commonalities in the abduction experience is folks see something that they think, whether it's Allagash 4 or whether it's, you know, other cases, they see something that reminds them of an insect. And if you think again about David Jacobs and the mind scans, then it's possible. What are human beings really kind of intimidated by, even though we're much bigger than?
I would actually like to add to that on top of that, and I've discussed this with you guys. If you have no concept of what you're viewing, okay, the first thing your brain's going to do is it's going to go through its memory and find the closest thing that actually can describe what you're seeing and tie it to it. So your description is going to match only the information that you carry with you.
Well, from your frame of reference, Mike.
That's correct. You know, so, you know, it may have had a praying mantis head shape, for all I know. To me, it looked like a praying mantis. You know, that's the thing. You know, it might actually just had a triangular head shape and a humanoid body, and it acted like an insect as far as the movement. And so my brain naturally would tie the symbol of a praying mantis to it, you know. That's a whole other show into itself. You know, you're talking about how observation and reality function.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's pick it back up. There are seven entities in the room that you counted at this point, and then this praying mantis type entity came into the room. So let's go back to the recording for a bit. Okay, what happens next?
She leans towards me.
It's female.
I think it is.
She leans toward you, and then what?
I can hear her telling me to calm down.
Is she speaking?
I can't tell.
Do you hear her with your ears or with your mind?
I think it's in my head.
Is her voice soothing, or is it firm? Describe her voice.
It's calm.
Does this calm the little boy down?
No, he's more scared now.
Then what happens?
Chops off the table.
Continue.
He just took off running out of the room.
Did he leave the room?
Yes.
I want you to follow him. Tell me where he goes.
Looks like a room full of consoles. A lot of lights.
Are there any other individuals in this room?
Yeah.
How many?
Two others.
What do they do when the little boy enters the room?
They turn around and watch him.
What happens next?
The female darts into the room with me.
Then what happens?
I'm hiding under a table. She keeps reaching for me.
Continue.
See the other guys come into the room too behind her.
Continue to describe it as a third-party observer. You are an independent, objective, unemotional, third-party observer. Describe what happens next.
I think they're confused.
Why?
I can't figure out why the little boy got away.
What happens next?
See one of them step up from the back.
Does this one look like the female or the first set or first individual?
It's one of the big-headed guys.
I want you to stop the sequence for a moment. And I want you to describe the big-headed guy. Tell me about features, body features, facial features.
Big eyes.
Big eyes.
Yeah.
And what else?
I think he has a nose. It's real small.
Does he have hair, beard? years.
Oh. I'll see in years. I'll see it here.
I want you to freeze this frame now, and I want you to go in a 360-degree circle around this individual. How tall is this individual?
4 feet.
Describe his body.
It looks like a 10-year-old.
How so?
He's skinny. Extremely skinny. Looks like a 10-year-old child.
What color is the skin?
Ashen.
I want you to focus in on the arms and the hands and describe them.
I got big knuckles.
How many digits?
3 fingers. That's weird.
3 fingers. Any other digits?
Yeah, it's
3 fingers and a thumb.
Yeah.
I want you to tell me how long is this person's arms in relation to its body. Less than a human, greater than a human, or the same as a human?
They're kind of like a human. Just a little bit longer, it looks like. Like, his fingers actually almost even with his knees.
What kind of clothing is this person wearing, if any? I want you to look down at his legs, his feet. Describe what you see.
Still got 4 toes.
How do they compare to human toes?
Like ours.
Are they all the same size, or some smaller or larger?
There's a couple of them are smaller.
Are they shorter, the same, or longer than a human's toes?
They're like the same length, they're just fatter.
Very good. Now, when we're finished with this observation, when we're finished with this deep relaxation, you will be able to retain the image of this individual in your mind. And if you wish, you'll be able to draw it flawlessly. Understood?
Yeah.
Now, I want you to allow the situation to continue. And I want you to tell me what happens next with the little boy.
He's screaming.
I want you, what's he saying? What are the words?
I go home. I want to go home.
Okay, what happens next?
That guy's leaning forward under the table. Looks like he's got a stick in his hand.
Describe the stick.
Looks like a tube of some sort.
What does he do with the tube?
Swipe with it.
What happens next?
See it light up. And then it lights up.
Continue with the sequence. What happens next? I want you to freeze the frame in your mind. I want you to take a deep breath. And I want to remind you that you are a third party, disinterested observer. I want you to remind yourself of that. You are simply observing. You are not feeling any emotions whatsoever. Understood?
Yes.
Good. Okay, folks, we're back live. We're going to pause it there for a moment. We're going to take a break in a moment. I think some of us here need one. So at this point, Mike has, as the four-year-old has run into another room, hidden under a table, and then the praying mantis type entity came up to you, right, Mike? And I think that's what it was, and I think there was another one in there too, and they had the stick, the light stick, which other people have described as well. So we'll pick that up. We appreciate everybody in the chat. We're going to take a break in a moment. We do appreciate you joining us. And if you've got questions, type them in the chat room. You can also call us. The numbers are on your screen. And we will continue this this audio recording in just a few minutes when we come back from the break. So bear with us just a minute. We'll be back in a few.
Where will you find a professional association of paranormal researchers?
Paranexus.org.
Where can you get research training, share data, and network with other researchers? Paranexus.org.
Where will you find a set of international standards for paranormal research groups?
Paranexus.org.
Paranexus is a global professional association of progressive paranormal investigators, parapsychologists, cryptozoologists, ufologists, and psychically gifted individuals focused on understanding the human condition through the scientific study of paranormal and psychical phenomena.
Paranexus.org.
A place to learn, a place to share, a place to network, a place to come together. Join us now at Paranexus.org.
By the way, Zed's the other abductee.
Okay, we're back, and welcome, Zed. Good to have you here. I am Doug Kelly. We are Paranexus Universe here with Grant Rudmedenst. Hey, Grant.
Hey, welcome, everybody. We're having a great show tonight with Mike.
Yeah, and Mike, welcome back.
Hey, guys.
And we are talking about abductions, of course, and one specific one. We did a regression here about 6 months ago, back in July, with Mike Jones, our very own Mike Jones from Paranexus. He's our technical coordinator, technical development coordinator for different things on Paranexus and a researcher. And so we've had an opportunity to really get into the thick of his case. This audio that we've been playing was the first regression we've done that we did with Mike. We've done several since then, and the event that he's discussing in this audio was what we think was the first time that he was abducted, and that was at age 4. Now, there's a couple of questions here in the chat. Let's get them on audio as well. One from Zed. Do you think it's the fear of being with something not of this world that makes it seem negative, or do you think they are really trying to scare you?
From my own experience, emotions really don't enter into it. You know, they try to keep you calm, I think, for the very purpose of making it easier on themselves. You know, they could care less, I think, in the end, whether or not you deal with it. They're going to do what they do. That's what I've dealt with all my life. You know, that's something that... They just don't seem to care. You know, there's no concern. It's just I'll give you a good analogy. It'd be the same as a scientist in a lab dealing with lab animals. You know, they may sit there and try to calm the little lab animal down before they inject it with something. But other than that, there's no emotional content there. You know, that's. That's pretty much, you know, in a nutshell, it's just how they treat you. It's
an emotional disconnect.
Exactly.
Yeah, that detachment. All right, so when we left off from the audio recording, Mike, as the little boy, the four-year-old, had run out of the room, hidden under a table, and was now, you know, the entities were trying to get him back in there, and they pointed this this light stick type of a thing at him, and so that's kind of where we left off. So let's pick up the recording at that point. Now, I want you to release the frame, allow it to continue, and I want you to tell me what happens next.
I'm on the floor. I can't move.
The little boy is on the floor, can't move?
Yeah.
From here forth, you will refer to him as the little boy. Disinterested third party you are. Observer.
what happens next.
I take them up.
What did they do with him?
They're carrying him back into the other room.
I want you to follow them in. Tell me what happens next.
The crowd around him for some reason.
Repeat that, please.
Crowded around him.
Is he on the table?
Yeah.
Okay. What happens next? You're able to get right in there as a third-party observer. You're able to view and watch without any emotional investment.
They're looking at him.
How long do they look at him? What happens next?
Sticking him with a needle.
Where at?
In his shin.
Right or left leg?
His right leg.
What happens next?
Look like they're just examining.
Are they injecting him or drawing out something?
Can't tell.
What happens next?
Team up. Comes up. Just like she's putting her hand on his head.
I want you to freeze the frame for a moment, and I want you to describe this female a little bit more. Is this the same individual that you described as a praying mantis?
Yes.
I want you to describe the arms.
Skinny and long.
Are they shorter, the same, or longer than a human's?
Longer.
Focus on the hands. Describe the hands, including the digits.
Yes. The hands are kind of like humans.
How many digits?
5.
Is there an opposing thumb?
Yeah.
Are there fingernails?
No.
How long are the fingers compared to a human's?
It looked longer.
Okay, I want you to focus on the legs. How do they compare to humans? Point out the differences, if any.
They're extremely skinny.
Is this person wearing clothing?
Yeah.
Describe the clothing.
Like a white uniform.
Is
does this female, how does this female compare to a human female anatomically?
I don't look at anything like.
Is this female individual wearing any kind of shoes?
No.
Can you see her feet?
Tables.
Okay, you are a third party. You can move around the table. You can gather information from previous scenes. I want you to get that all in your mind. And I want you to look at her feet and tell me what you see.
Looks like set feet.
Repeat that, please.
Looks like insect feet.
Can you describe them?
Just like two toes in the front, one in the rear.
Okay. I want you to look at this individual and describe her head. This is easy for you. You were a third party, not emotionally invested. Take a deep breath. You were looking at this entire scene in a neutral point of view. You're simply relating what you're saying without any emotional effect.
Her head's triangular. She's got big eyes like the other guys, too.
Does her head resemble the other guys in any way?
No.
I want you to look at the rest of her body. Are there any other appendages?
It's not the same.
About the same or not the same?
Not the same.
Okay. Do you see anything else besides two arms, two legs, and a head?
Got a mouth like an insect.
A mouth like an insect?
Yeah.
Can you describe that? Are there...
Like a grasshopper's mouth.
Okay. Anything else that you see?
She's kind of brown in color.
Now, I want you to take a good look at her. When this session is over with, you will find it extremely easy to draw her, just as if you were an artist, an accomplished artist, same as the other individuals. You'll be able to draw them completely inaccurately. Understood?
Yeah.
Now, I want you to allow the scene to continue. Little boy is on the table. He's been had a needle inserted. What significant thing happens next?
Putting her hand on his head.
Then what happens?
Just tell him that it'd be okay.
Is the little boy awake or asleep?
I think he's actually awake.
Describe his state. Is he paralyzed?
Yeah, can't move.
What's the next thing that happens?
telling me not to worry.
Does that comfort the little boy?
He's scared. Can't move.
What happens next?
She tells him it'll be okay. And I'm going home.
Are you going to go home and what?
Home.
What's the next thing you remember? She's telling you, the little boy, it will be okay. What's the next thing that happens?
Don't need to worry about recurring.
Don't need to worry about it recurring?
Remembering.
Remembering. What does she mean?
She tells me I'll forget about everything.
What happens next?
Getting sleepy.
Okay. Remember, you're a third-party observer. You're watching this. What happens next?
Little boy's asleep.
And then what happens?
Being put in bed.
Repeat that, please.
Being put back in bed.
Do you have a clock in your room anywhere?
Yeah.
Look at the clock and tell me what time it says. You're being put back in bed by the same individual that took you?
I think so.
Once you're put back into bed, what happens next?
I'm awake, but I can't move still.
How long does that last?
I don't know.
What's the next thing that happens?
Oh, man.
You all right?
Yeah. Started screaming.
Okay, we're back live. I'm going to pause it here. We got approximately 5 minutes left of the recording, and I just want to make a couple of comments here. At this point, Mike comes out of hypnosis automatically a little bit, and it's due to him screaming as a little boy. And so we'll pick up with that and get a couple of more clues in the remainder of the audio. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good.
Any comments?
Yeah, you're talking about the screaming. The thing of it was, I was in third person for most of it, and the moment I started experiencing the emotion, you know, that little boy, it was me, and I started screaming. I literally snapped back into my body and snapped out of hypnosis, and that was a pretty weird experience. It was different, but I will make a side comment. The whatever they did to my shin, I still have the actual scar mark on that shin. I mean, it's still there to this day. So that was another thing that kind of brought it home that this was really happening. You know, it's one thing to
hear what you think you're remembering or what may have happened, but then you have, you know, corroborating evidence, you know, like the scar on my shin that matches exactly where I remember them sticking me. So, you know, it's interesting.
Well, Sharon had a question too. The praying mantis, did she stroke your face? Do you remember any of that?
No, it was more like she put her hand over my face, kind of like to block my view of anything else going on. I don't know if it was just to get my attention, you know, where I would stare at the hand, where it was easier for them to do mind control or whatever they do.
Do you recall the shape of the hand? Was it like a human hand? Was it?
It was kind of elongated and skinnier across the palm, and the tips of the fingers were not as rounded as a human's. I wouldn't say pointed, but they came to more of a tip than a human finger.
But not claw-like.
Not claw-like, no.
Interesting.
Well, you know, the other thing that's really interesting too, fellas, and I'm sure that our audience will agree with me on this, is that many of the folks that have undergone the abduction experience talk about this being as being in the role of leadership, as being one who's more ancient, and most importantly, as being a individual that's female, that they always perceive as female. And I think that's something that's consistent that we've seen and if you do any kind of serious research into the abduction experience, you'll see that this is almost universal with abductees.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so we've got a few minutes left of the recording, and then we can open it up and discuss all of it. Now, again, just to recap, Mike, as a little boy, 4-year-old, has been placed back in his bed, and he woke up screaming, and that brought him out of the hypnosis, although he wasn't completely out of it, but it did bring him back out. So we'll talk for a moment here on the recording, and then I'm going to ask him a couple of more questions. So let's continue with the recording here. Okay, just take a deep breath. You're doing fine. You're doing great. How are you feeling?
Different.
Okay, so you were brought out of hypnosis because you were screaming?
Yeah.
Now, thing after that?
Yeah.
Okay, you remember it easily. Tell me, after you were screaming, what happened?
Dad comes into the room and asked me what's the matter. And I told him about the small guy who's come in my room and the praying mantis that chased me. He told me I was having a nightmare.
Okay.
It took me a while to calm down.
And then did you go back to sleep?
Not very easy.
Did you remember this after the fact?
Partially.
Okay. What date? Whenever I say 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, sleep, you find it easy to go back into a deep state. 5, 4, deeper, 3, deeper, 2, 1, sleep. Now, I want you to remember you're a third-party observer. I want you to take a deep breath and allow yourself to easily go back into that incredible, peaceful state of deep relaxation. It's all right. Just allow it to happen. Deeper and deeper, breathing rhythmically in and out. Feel the rhythm of your breathing. Allow
allow yourself to just drift now. I want you to find yourself at the count of 3, 2, 1. I want you to find yourself back in the library, in that archive of your mind, right where you were to begin with. 3, 2, 1. You're there. You're standing in front of that table with the book on the table, the one that said 1972. I want you to look at it. It's open to the date of this event. I want you to look at the page and tell me the date that you see plainly.
April. Six.
Very good. Now, I'm going to count from 3 to 1. As I do, I want you to find yourself in your room, seeing your 6-year-old self sleeping there when the person is there watching. 3, 2, 1. You're there. Describe what you see.
Like a 4-foot guy in the room looking over my body.
I want you to look at the clock, and I want you to read the time.
It's like 15 to 2.
Very good. 1:45, is that correct?
Yes.
Now, I want you to go to your peaceful place. 3, 2, 1. You're there. Peaceful place. Deep breath. Completely relaxed. Feeling incredibly good. Safe and sound. Secure. All right. And that is the end of that audio. Interesting. So, from what we can gather from the regression, at the last part, that's why I wanted to get the time that it began, which was 1:45, and it ended at 4:15, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
So we've got 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
So how you feel? How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay. I'll tell you another thing that we... I thought we actually had that part of the audio where I was talking about what day it was also of the week. Or was that in a different regression?
I think that might have been a different one.
Yeah. That's the other thing, too, while we're doing these regressions. You know, ask me the date and the day of the week it is, you know, of it is. What, you know. And it'll actually, they actually match up. That's the interesting part.
Yeah. So, just to recap a couple of things, there's a question in the chat room. Do the beings that are seen have any clothing on? The praying mantis had a white uniform, correct?
Yes.
And the others?
The others were just skin, as far as I could tell. No genitalia. They were humanoid. There was no clothing whatsoever. They were, for the better part of what a gray is, a gray. You know, they're actually ashen white in color to kind of a bluish tint, I guess, but it's mainly ashen white.
Now, you drew a picture later on of the gray individuals, and if folks want to see that, I'm putting the link in the chat room. It's at paranexus.net. It's at the registry, Paranexus registry. If you go to paranexus.net, that will take you to the registry, and you can see Mike's drawing there of the gray. So, if anybody does have questions, be sure and put them in the chat room. If you want to call in, you can. If you'd like to ask Mike questions directly, the number is 347-945-7799. I will also put the number in the chat room. And you can also use your click-to-talk button if you have a headset on your computer. Now, Mike, another question. How do you know they are female? And I think that Cookie is referring to the praying mantis.
The praying mantis, You know, I made comments in another interview where we were talking about this. I don't know if you've actually experienced this, but you can walk blindly into a room and just tell what gender is around you in general. But the voice that was coming across, the general feeling of it, the praying mantis, it was a female. I mean, the others, I want to call them male, but, you know, male like a drone maybe, you know, that's... I don't know really that they had a gender as far as the grays were concerned. You know.
Interesting. Interesting stuff. Grant, any comments?
It's just that, you know, we're very fortunate to have Mike on board with us, Paranexus, and that he shared his experience with us, and he's been as candid and open as he has been, and it's tough sometimes. And, you know, we're just very fortunate to have Mike, and you know, he's taught us a great deal, and we're learning a great deal, and hopefully, you know, we'll continue to do so, and once, you know, whatever we get, we'll share. And well, the thing that I've always found so striking about Mike is that, you know, the experiences that he's had parallel so many others that I've read about and have researched, so.
Well, I remember... when we first met here last, around the beginning of June, and Mike had joined Paranexus, taken the CPI course, and then he called me, and we began to talk, and he eventually he told me he was an abductee, and I think you felt a little concerned, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, there comes a point, you know, being an abductee, where you just get fed up with hiding. And then you finally find a group of people that you feel safe around enough to talk to. And, you know, I've spent the majority of my life in hiding and just trying to have a normal life. But, you know, you can't exist like that, so you have to find a niche. Well, the only people that I found that would... allow me room enough to be who I was in paranormal research, and that's kind of the direction I took, on top of wanting to learn more about how to actually perform paranormal research. You know, that was another thing is, you know, I needed a little bit more background myself to, you know, to be able to logically explain what's going on around me without, you know, just bantering. That's, you know, if you listen to a lot of these people's testimonies, you'll hear them, you know, give the story, their spiel and everything, and what ends up happening is you're just hearing another story, whereas, you know, I've actually gone to the point now where I'm collecting data, I'm actually collecting evidence, I've collected evidence, I've got stuff in the freezer now, I'm just waiting to have enough money to actually have it tested, learning how to take your pictures and logging events and keeping your own diaries. I mean, this is all part of paranormal research. It's very, very important to validate what's going on in you, you know, with what your investigation. Well, and for me personally, it applies to my situation. But like I said, you know, for me, I had to find an outlet and I had to find friends out there, and it just turned out this is just the way it worked out. You know, it turned out for the better.
Well, and I'd like to state that, you know, when Mike told me that, I, of course, listened with an open mind. I didn't make any prejudgments, but I did listen. How do I put this? I listened with discretion and listened to what he was saying, and I asked a lot of questions, and over the course of the following months, we talked about it a lot, and one of the things that I found compelling with Mike is just the fact that he's so stable and grounded, and he wasn't seeking publicity. He wasn't asking for anything. He just wanted to understand better, and that really made an impression on me, so that's why we proceeded to explore this. Now, there's some other questions in the chat as well. One question is, do they speak our language?
I don't know if they actually speak our language. You know, they seem to scan your thoughts. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you talk to your pet dog or pet cat or anything else, they seem to understand you just fine. I think it's kind of along the same basis. It's more of an emotional transfer of information than it is anything else.
Telepathic.
Symbologies, things like that. You know, they use what's common as far as in your memory and your thoughts to transfer their ideas to you and what they need you to do. As far as speaking our own language, I think that's just how it translates in your mind, in your mind's eye, when they talk to you, for a better word of it.
All right. Have you ever asked them any questions and gotten answers?
I aggravated the shit out of them one time, wanting to know why they were doing what they were doing. And you know, the odd thing is, I always get ambiguous answers. I have never got a direct answer out of them yet to this day. One time I asked them continually why they were doing what they were doing. The answer I got was, it was for my own good. And then the next question was, you know, well, why me? And then the next, you know, answer I'm getting is, because I chose to. Well, you know, and all my life, and all the things I've ever chose to do, this is not one of them. And this is where, you know, I go into why I try to explain to the other abductees that just because they're telling you they're the good guys, just because they're telling you that they are doing things for your own benefit, you know, don't necessarily believe that. You know, I've actually started to understand that there's a lot of subterfuge going on. You know, it's kind of like they're telling you what you want to hear so they can get on with what they're trying to achieve. And then that's basically what's happening with that.
Yeah, so it's about their agenda. It's not about ours.
Exactly.
And, you know, and I think that folks, you know, tend to lose, I don't know, to me, and we've kicked this around, you know where I'm coming from on this one, guys. And I just basically, you know, wonder about anybody that has a technology that can actually manipulate an individual's mind manipulate people neurologically to induce things like paralysis through like a mind scan has to be pretty far advanced. And I think most people tend to think, they're a couple hundred years. And in my mind, I'm thinking, what if they're like a million years ahead of us? I mean, their technology would appear just like, I think Carl Sagan said sometime, and a civilization that far in advance of us, their technology would have the appearance of magic.
Magic, right, exactly. Or, you know, the other thought is they could be parasitic, and that is exactly how they go about their business. You know, there's a lot of parasitic animals out there that actually use the physiology of the other animal to control them.
Yeah, and let's not lose sight of the fact, too, that sometimes parasitic relationships can also be symbiotic. Well, you know, where they're sharing and there's a mutual benefit. So, I mean, who knows? When you're kicking this stuff around, and I'm sure folks in the audience will agree, you've got to be open to any possibility.
Right.
Especially when you think in terms of the incredible size of the universe and the possibilities with so many planets and stars out there that anything goes. And then, as you well know, Mike, when you start kicking around quantum mechanics, then it gets really weird.
Right. You know, I've discussed on many occasions with the guys about, you know, what I'm observing, what's being reported, is actually plays back into quantum, you know, quantum science and dimensional technology. You know, it's not so much that it's magic as it's just a different way of doing things. You know, what we observe and what we know is from what we've actually developed as a technology. That doesn't mean that there's not a whole entire another field of science laying out there that these guys are using. And you know, that's why it sounds so fantastic, some of the things they're doing, like floating through a wall. Well, if you'll do some research on the internet, you'll find out that a lab up north had just developed a material not too long ago that's able to pass through itself, and it's a solid, it's solid matter, and so there is a way to do it, evidently.
Well, that's in line with quantum mechanics as well, because from what I understand about it, is there's actually more space between the atoms that make things up than there are atoms.
Correct.
So, you know,
absolutely. You got to remember the old Heisenberg compensators, because the whole problem with doing that is that you can never pinpoint the location of one atom at any point in time or space, because it's constantly in the process of vibrating. So you can slip between, because it's possible to slip between those cracks. And it's an interesting concept.
Well, the thing you're getting into there is you're also discussing the fact that, you know, what appears solid is not actually solid. What you're dealing with is electromagnetic fields interacting. There's no such thing as solid.
Right.
You know, that's just how compact a magnetic field is.
Absolutely.
Or the energy packets, whichever, however you want to look at it.
Here's
you know, if we just digress for a second. I'm sorry, Doug. But one thing I also wanted to comment on, too, was, you know, Mike, when you're talking about your experiences and you're asking the entities questions, one of the things that I've always been, you know, I always thought was fascinating was folks that have been in a similar position have asked them that. Why are you doing this to me? And the response that I thought was the most kind of, I'm trying to think of the right adverb here or adjective, that was most startling was the response one abductee reported that. They said, because we have every right to do this.
Yeah, I know. That part unnerves me because
that's how they act. To do this. Yeah.
That's exactly how they act.
Basically, your property, and we will do what we want.
And related to that, you know, when Mike had told me the first time that when he asked, you know, why are you doing this? Well, because you said we could or you chose it. And I'm thinking, all right, we're talking about a four-year-old little boy here. Now, first of all, that doesn't make sense because a four-year-old is not in any position to make those kinds of decisions, those lifelong decisions. All right, that's one hypothesis. They asked a little boy, and he said, yeah, but I doubt that. Here's another one. You know, what if they were just being manipulative? You know, they were just they're basically manipulative, and they were telling him, which amounts to BS, just as a mind stroke, if you will.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I had also thought, and that's what Sharon had asked here in the chat room, here's a what if. What if before Michael was born, he chose to come to the world and participate in the experiments in order for these entities to learn? You know, obviously that would necessitate a belief in reincarnation. Any thoughts, Mike?
I've actually thought about that myself. You know, I've actually contemplated, you know, what if. And this is outlandish as it gets, too, guys. What if I were one of them and they put me in a human body to find out what it was to be a human? You know,
Jesus.
You know, exactly. You know, it goes into, you know, how many different themes do you want to run here with this? And that's the whole problem with this entire abduction scenario. We are inside the fishbowl. These guys are outside the fishbowl like a cat. All we can see is what's in the fishbowl. The cat puts his paw in and gets what he wants, you know. And that's the problem here. We're not the observer. We are the experiencer, and that's where the problem comes in. So,
yeah, you could speculate on what's going on, and that's, you know, we don't have a lot of answers. You know, we're gaining information little by little, but a lot of the information we're gaining is coming from regressions, and hypnotists such as Bud Hopkins and Michael Jacobs David Jacobs and others, you know, what we're trying to do here is find corroborating experiences. One of the things that makes it harder is when Whitley Strieber's book came out, Communion, and when Bud Hopkins' book came out back in the 80s in Intruders, I believe. You know, now the interesting thing about it is that knowledge is available basically to the public.
That's right.
And it's interesting when you take a look at the way this whole thing kind of came down. Abduction started really happening in the very late 50s, but really into the 60s, 70s, and so forth. And the Greys were more of a popular recent introduction, so to speak.
Well, you know, though, Doug, if you look at it from a pure historical standpoint, human beings have always had some sort of mythology surrounding things that they can't explain. And I'm sure you remember, like, the changelings. mm-hmm. you know, where these mysterious creatures came and exchanged babies, and, you know, even elves from the old medieval times are somewhat similar in description to, you know, what we would call aliens now. So either it's one or two things. It's either a continuing mythology, or we are interacting with some sort of maybe other entity that co-inhabits this planet with us, or maybe they're from another dimension or another point in the universe somewhere.
You know, the fact that you mentioned dimension, that's the other thing here. I don't know that necessarily they aren't really here, that they're not from another planet, that these are actually dimensional beings that live on Earth also. You know, they didn't really prominently show up until after the nuclear explosions when they were doing the field tests in America. And I find that really fascinating, you know. They've reared their heads at different points of time in history, you know. And it seems to always happen at the high point of societies, if you go back and look historically.
Well, and the grays, and as Sharon brings out, cave drawings showing these light grays, that's true. What's interesting about it is that some of the, I don't know, let's put it this way. Some have said, well, the grays are really an American, Nordic, European thing. And once the grays really came to light, especially with Bud Hopkins' book and Whitley Strieber's book and so forth, they really came into the popular awareness, public awareness. And so what was an American thing then began to show up around the world as these things began to become popular. You know, yeah, you got to consider that. It's just that I don't know that that is the only explanation. I think that was talking about is relevant. You know, the trolls, the elves, the all those.
Well, if you look through all the different cultures, through all spans of history, they all describe large-eyed creatures, skinny, emaciated bodies, large heads that come in and steal their children. And it's just, it reoccurs over and over and over. And I find that fascinating. I find it fascinating that a lot of cultures base their religions around these, you know, beings that show up from the heavens. You know, there's a lot of history in humanity dealing with this. And you know, it's amazing to me that not more people have actually taken interest and started doing research on a historical basis.
Well, you know, too, the thing of it is that I'm sure you guys will agree with me, is that after Bud Hopkins and Whitley Strieber came out with their books, the whole thing was contaminated.
Yeah.
The whole, you know, we've had people, and I mean, Doug, you and I have talked to folks, and maybe some people in the audience would be able to relate to this, that have called us up when we made it known that Paranexus was going to, you know, start seriously investigating this. We've had people call us up that I've spent 2 hours on the telephone with, that, you know, you're listening politely to their story, and I mean, it gets farther and farther and farther and farther out. And it the difference between, and a person like that, the only reason I bring it up is they're not grounded like Mike. The story gets wilder and wilder. And think of the times, Doug, we've had numerous calls like that where people have called us and talked to us for 2-3 hours. About stuff that
we've
claiming
done,
to be abducted.
The regressions, at least one, you know, and that panned out to be nothing. There was nothing there other than psychology.
Right.
You know, and you got to factor in whether a person is fantasy prone. You have to factor in whether they have a vivid imagination, whether there's schizophrenia involved. You know, that's the kind of stuff you got to consider, the psychology of it. You have to rule all of that out before you even begin to think of an anomalous conclusion, or at least go down that path. Now, there's a couple of questions yet in the chat. How many times have you been abducted, Mike?
It's been ongoing all my life. As far as my memory is concerned, before this year, more than 20 times this year, three that I know of, you know. Like I said, I could never tell when it's going to happen. I'd never know. You know, it may not even happen 1 year that I know of. And then there's other years that it's almost a weekly occurrence, it seems like. it just depends, you know. It depends on if they're, I guess, if they're interested in what I'm doing, you know. I will say this, since I've started my website and I've tried to reach out and help other people, they have seemed to take interest in me and what I'm doing more. I'm not sure why they even care, other than maybe I'm onto something and they don't like it. You know, that's just a personal thought.
you know, there's a real interesting parallel between abductees and folks who may have psychic abilities, and it's the parallel that I've seen. I'm sure you'll agree with me, Doug, is the fact that many times when we've bumped into people and been doing paranormal investigations, we've come to the conclusion after, you know, being investigating for a little while, that maybe the individual that is the center of attention or feels that their experience of haunting is really has psychic abilities, and they're just not aware of it, or if they are aware of it, they're very reluctant to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they talk about it, what are they going to be labeled as? They're going to be labeled as a kook or a nut, whatever. So for folks like Mike, my feeling is, and this is my personal feeling, that there may be many more people out there who have experienced things that are very similar or have incidents of missing time that they can't explain on a regular basis and are struggling with it because they're hardworking guys and gals who really think that maybe, you know, they're teetering on the edge of having psychiatric problems or psychological problems, when in reality that may not be the case. And rather than coming out and talking to somebody about it, because there's not a lot of support groups out there for abductees. My hat's off to Bud Hopkins and Dr. David Jacobs, because they did that. And also, most importantly, to Mike, because Mike Jones is reaching out to folks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what his website's about. And that's one of the most important things, if you're an abductee, to keep in mind, is that there are support groups out there. You just got to look hard for them. And when you find them, they can be a great relief for you.
Yeah. All right. Just a couple of last questions. Just want to acknowledge, you already mentioned the Anunnaki, the Greys, were considered their worker bees. That's from Zechariah Sitchin's work. If you're not familiar with him, you might want to pick up The 12th Planet, and he's got a whole series of books. As far as how do they survive, we don't know. We don't really know.
Yeah, that's something I've...
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, well, that's something, I don't know exactly how they survive. As far as I can tell, they sweat their excrement. I mean, they stink. They smell like a dirty, musty basement as far as the Greys are concerned. As far as I can tell, that's how they, as far as what they're doing to take in food, I'm not sure how that works.
Well, you know, if our audience really wants to read a scary story, read the Krill documents, it's often referred to as the dark side hypothesis. And, you know, if you want nightmares for, you know, 24 hours or so, the Krill memorandum, I maybe I've got that right, but it's the K-R-I-L-L.
K-R-I-L-L. All right, we've got about a minute to go, and we've got a couple of things to do, so we're going to have to cut this short. As far as do they always do medical experiments, there has been some evidence to suggest no. Mike, are you worried that they might take you, not bring you back real quick?
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's occurred to me all the time. So.
All right. So we've got 90 seconds, as she says. Be sure and visit Mike's website, alienabductee.org. It's in the chat room. It's also linked off of Paranexus, alienabductee.org. If you feel you have been abducted and you'd like to investigate that, you're more than welcome to contact us through Paranexus.org. If you're not yet a member of Paranexus, we'd love to have you. Share the vision. We're building an organization to do serious research, and we're also looking to build an organization of field researchers. So visit Paranexus.org. If you would like to extend your knowledge, then you can take courses at ParanexusAcademy.org. We have the certification as a paranormal investigator. We're going to be adding more courses. Just added the leadership course, which has been long in the making. It's a full-blown leadership course, and they're both available on ParanexusAcademy.org. Mike, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks, guys.
And if you, our listeners, if you enjoyed this program tonight, we have other audios, and we would be willing to do a similar thing as we've done tonight if you would like it. So let us know. And be sure and rate the show. We'd really appreciate a high rating. We always appreciate your time and attention and your attendance to the show. Grant, it's been a show. You take
care. Oh, yeah. Hey, good night, everybody. And we always appreciate your feedback. And if you want to be a guest on the show or give us a call, send us an email, do so. We'd love to hear from you.
Take care, everybody.
Good night. Good night.